You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of November 29th, 2017. And would you like this loot box gift wrapped?
Podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humanist conversation about video games. And we're talking about a touchy subject these days.
Oh, yeah.
It has gotten the internet fiery, angry, hostile, very upset, and that is loot boxes. We're talking about loot boxes today because it seems to be the topic that doesn't die. It hasn't died lately.
The undead loot boxes.
Undead loot boxes. The actual reason that I brought it up is because I saw something that triggered my nerve, and that is some Destiny 2 experience points controversy, which I'll explain in a bit. But I think this does directly tie, or at the very least, seems to tie to the way that games monetize randomness or random things, right? So just to give a quick overview, here's the Destiny 2 debacle so we can sort of understand the context of what was happening there, right? So in Destiny, when you reach level 20, that is the maximum level, light level you can have in the game. And one of the ways that the game monetizes is by selling bright engrams or silver, which you can use to buy like aesthetic skins and some other like in-game boosts.
And you can also get those every once in a while in the game.
Yes. So every time you level up, you get one free bright engram. It's like, hey, congratulations, you've got a, you know, you get like a loot box, right? Whenever you level up. A lot of games do this. League of Legends changed how they monetize in-game recently to basically have these every time you level up loot boxes. Again, seems to me like a pretty big footprint from Overwatch.
Yep.
Which I think where a lot of this is originally coming from, which is so funny because did they get much shit for their loot box system?
I think they squeezed in under the wire of all of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? I do remember they did get some because of how quickly you got loot boxes during events, right? Like someone did the math, if you remember, and calculated like I'd have to play 50 years of Overwatch to get all the Mercy skins or whatever. So I remember they did receive some flack for that. Anyway, so in Destiny, whenever you do certain events or quests or missions or what have you, you get a certain amount of experience points and it pops up on your screen. You've earned 50,000 experience points. Well, recently, the folks over the sort of amateur investigators, the Spotlight team over at Reddit, discovered that there was a discrepancy between how much experience points an event said you were earning and how much actually appeared in the little experience points measurement tracker on your screen. And after crunching some numbers and sort of figuring it out, the Redditor Energizer X discovered that it seemed as though there was a hidden algorithm that diminished how many experience points you received when you would do repeat events. Even though the game was telling you you received a certain amount, it would not give you that full amount. I think the in a normal unheated internet environment, we might look at that and say, okay, I think this is Bungie's efforts of minimizing the troublesome effects of grinding out experience points that that can have on the economy of the game, right? The value of things will shift if you can farm them, right? Like if you remember the loot cave back from Destiny 1, Like they want to avoid things like that. So in order to disincentivize repeatedly doing maybe an easy public event, they added in an algorithm that would diminish, give you diminishing returns on those repeat events. The problem is they didn't tell anybody about that. And so it seems as though, if you're a casual observer, that they're doing this to monetize the loot boxes easier because they're not letting you farm experience points in the most efficient way possible, right? They're basically hiding the fact that you're not actually doing efficient things so that you end up wasting your time and want to eventually succumb to buy a loot box. At least I think that is where some of the controversy comes from for this particular decision.
I don't understand. I almost want to say that this, it's almost like an over, like I don't believe that you can be so foolish to think that people just won't notice.
You know? Yeah. That's true. I mean, especially when you look at like ARGs, right?
Yeah.
People from around the internet will investigate time and time again any little discrepancy or weird thing in the game, especially something like Destiny that has MMO elements, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, they know that people are going to look at it so carefully.
I'm surprised it wasn't caught until now, though, right?
Yeah, like,
theoretically, this has been going on for some time.
I wonder. Well, at least since maybe the game launched, which has been a couple months already, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's been out for a while. What's interesting to me, though, right, is so as soon as this was caught, Bungie released a statement. And the statement wasn't an apology. It's not like, oh, my bad, you caught us. You know, like, we shouldn't have done that. You're right, yada, yada, yada. It was like, it said, you know, oh, yes, this thing exists. Yes, we're not happy with it either. We're stopping it. We're turning it off immediately. So they immediately turned it off, right? Two things, right? One is, I think it's pretty clear that the Battlefront 2 debacle about Darth Vader being hidden behind a paywall, essentially.
That's the real path of the Sith.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Once again, we can blame the Galactic Empire for the strife that plagues the galaxy. I think that speedy response is one that you have to have, right? You're like, oh, shit. Players can basically unite and completely tank sales or affect the entire conversation around Star Wars Battlefront. I was on Instagram the other day, and I saw an ad for Battlefront. And out of curiosity, I clicked on the comments to see what people were saying. Oh, boy, let me tell you. People were not happy receiving that ad on Instagram.
Jeez.
So I think that speedy response was basically a direct sort of reaction based upon the blowback that Battlefront 2 received, right?
Especially in a game like Destiny that is predicated on the assumption that people are going to play it for at least a year. And so if you screw yourself over 3 months in, then you've effectively killed your entire plan for the year.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I also think it's interesting, though, that the way that they talk about it is as though, like, they also just discovered this algorithm. Like, whoa, you're right. This wasn't working the way we wanted it to be. We're turning it off right away. It's great that you're being responsive. At the same time, it feels a little weird and disingenuous to be like, oh, yeah, this really wasn't working, so we're addressing it too. And we've also been paying attention. It wasn't the fact that you brought it up. We were going to turn it off eventually anyway. You know, like, what a coincidence. You figured out it was bad the same time we figured out it was bad.
I mean, the sad thing is, I'm sure there is a whole faction inside of Bungie who was like, we can't do this, people. This is sleazy. This is, you know, not transparent to the players. This doesn't even feel right. And then there's some other people that were like, nah, let's just do it. And then that latter camp won, and now here we are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you saw it with Battlefront, right? Like, the day or so after the shit really started hitting the fan around Battlefront, the devs did an AMA on Reddit specifically. Yeah. I think my guess is they were just trying to sort of like open the doors and say, hey, let's air this out. We're real people.
Yeah.
We want you to have a good experience. And I felt nothing for sympathy for those guys, because you know that most of the devs, like, you know, look, they're not, a lot of them are not monetization experts.
Yeah.
They didn't come up with these ideas about what to lock and what not to lock. You know, that's probably a few people in a room making that decision, and they just want you to have the best game possible. They're also severely constrained because they can't really be open about the matter and talk about why that decision was made when they weren't the ones making that decision, nor do they have the power to really change how that's done, right? So it's unfortunate, and you know, they shouldn't be saying anything also, because that's really not their job in that way. So it's kind of unfortunate, because they were put in a place where they were at trying to answer questions that they could, by definition, not answer, and it wasn't really on them to answer in the first place anyway.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the sad thing about the Bungie thing is that I don't necessarily disagree with what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's the way you want to structure your game of having diminishing returns for something that people have min-maxed, then that's a fair thing to do. I mean, you know, even games like Dark Souls do that to a certain extent when, like, enemies don't respawn as quickly. And I mean, there are anti-farming techniques in a lot of games. Totally. It's just that they're transparent about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And having that transparency is really key. I think we're in a weird spot with in-game monetary transactions in particular, where I think it's more and more safe to err on the side of intense transparency.
Yeah.
You know, because this is a case where even if you have, you know, even if you have the best intention, if players aren't going to give you the benefit of the doubt because they're used to being scammed and, you know, taken advantage of from the perspective of, you know, publishers or whatnot, right? Then, you know, you're probably better off just saying, hey, to be perfectly honest, we have this thing. We don't know if it's going to work. That's fine. Yeah. And to some extent, I feel that way even about loot boxes, right? Like, I think it's totally okay to say, hey, look, you know, we want to continue supporting this game. We have to pay engineers. We have to pay designers. We have to pay creative. We have to pay marketing. We have to pay a ton of people to keep these games alive. And that's true. Games are expensive. Games that are alive are still expensive to run, right?
Yeah.
It makes sense, and I'm okay with them being like, look, this is how we want to monetize. We want to do loot boxes. We want to sell skins, whatever, right? And I think some companies out there do a pretty decent job of that.
I think that's probably a pretty good point to pivot to the actual loot box discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't think either of us have played the new Star Wars game. Did you play any of it?
No, not at all.
Me neither. And
I mean, I probably wasn't going to be honest, just because I've been pretty busy and there's a lot of games to play, but...
But now that I can't even buy my way to a victory, why would I play it?
Yeah, exactly. What? Come on. I mean, if I can't buy Darth Vader... And to some extent, I am sympathetic, though. Like, as a Star Wars fan, right? Mm-hmm. I want to fucking be Darth Vader. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I bet you... I don't know this for a fact, but... I bet working on a Star Wars game is incredibly difficult because they're very protective of what the Star Wars brand and style guide and all that stuff is.
Yeah.
And I bet you there's a whole another way you could have gone with this where instead of making Darth Vader cost 60,000 creds instead of 6,000 or whatever, in another universe where Star Wars...
In a galaxy far, far away, you might
far,
say.
Far away, away from the iron fist of Disney, you could have had, oh, here's polka dot Darth Vader. You can buy it for, you know, 3,000 credits. But, you know, that's never going to happen with Star Wars. And so you can't monetize anything but gameplay.
That's a very interesting, that's a very interesting point I hadn't really considered.
And again, I don't know this for a fact, but I can just imagine you know.
I think you're probably right, though, right? Like, we know that, you know, there are other companies that have very strong strangleholds over their IP. I mean, Disney is the perfect example, but you could look at Warner Brothers, you know, like Shadow of Mordor is a huge success, but that's set entirely away from all of the characters and events of Lord of the Rings.
That's
not
true,
supposed to touch that stuff, right? Like, they're not going to monetize, like, oh, now you can play as Frodo and stuff. Like, that's not going to happen because they don't want to tarnish that. So, yeah, that's interesting. I think that's a pretty good perspective. But again, like, you know, if this is really hard, I also sympathize from the publisher side, because how do you be transparent about how you want to make money without coming off like an asshole, especially when you're talking to consumers that have a very hard time understanding how expensive games are to make, and where costs are, and, you know, the sort of, and, like, you know, you have a mandate from your stockholders and stuff, right? Like, corporations are meant to make money, and this is why corporations are necessarily evil and are terrible things, to some extent, right? Like, we shouldn't be surprised by people doing this, you know?
It is their nature.
Yeah, like, so how do you talk about it and be open about it and be fair about it, right? And I think monetizing gameplay is one of the most dangerous things, because that is just... gaming consumers, like the people who are aware in particular, are just naturally opposed to that. Monetize the shit out of skins. People will still complain, but you can do it really easily.
Do you think that the way that, I think it's, it might even be a government regulation in Japan, but it's in China, but it's definitely China, it's definitely exists in games where you have to show the odds of winning. Do you think would that impact your behavior at all?
Yeah, that's really interesting. It is a law in China. I know for a fact that you have to, anything that could be considered gambling is heavily regulated. And so anytime a company has those like odds or that game available in China, it ends up coming out what the actual odds are. And I'm pretty sure that's actually why the Overwatch loot boxes stats came out, because that information became publicly available. I didn't look at that information, though. you know, I don't know. That's a good point.
It's kind of like if I'm going to Taco Bell, I think, you know, there are laws in California about showing nutrition facts and calorie counts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But do you still really don't look at that shit? I'm already in Taco Bell.
Well, okay. So, but here's the thing about loot boxes, especially aesthetic loot boxes, right? If I'm going to make a decision to buy a loot box in Overwatch, right? I know that my odds, and I might look at the odds and say, oh, my odds of getting that cool Mercy skin is 0.2%.
Mm-hmm.
So this may be not a great idea to buy this loot box for that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can say is, you know, but even if I don't get that Mercy skin, I might get something else that's, hey, you know what? That's pretty cool. You know, because I can look at what's on display and say, oh, well, the relative value of this loot box is still decent, you know.
Mm-hmm. The relative value to you, you mean, or the relative value to, like, what you pay for?
Think of it this way, right? Like, if I were to look at the stats and it said, you are guaranteed one skin and then you might get a bunch of sprays, right?
Mm.
If I'm going after one skin, I might say, you know what? I'm better off saving my money and just straight up buying the skin, because at least in Overwatch, that's possible.
Yeah.
If it's not possible, or if I just want to take the chances, I can still say, hey, well, at least I'll get a skin. It might not be for the champion that I want, but who knows? Let's just roll the dice and see what happens.
Yeah.
If, however, I would look at those stats and said, you have a 1% chance of getting a skin, and of those skins, you have like a 1 in 15 chance of getting the one that you want, I would be far less likely to buy that loot box, because the value is really low, because I'm just going to get a bunch of fucking sprays, right? Yeah. And at the end of the day, I get to decide, when I have that clarity, what I think is a valuable risk, or what the relative worth is going to be, right?
Yeah.
Like, so for example, if I were to buy a booster pack and Magic cards, right? And look, Magic the Gathering has been doing loot boxes for fucking years, guys. Like, they've been making a killing.
Magic the Gathering has been doing physical loot boxes, aka cards.
Yeah, I mean, they have, right? Like, that random generation is still keeping Wizards of the Coast strong to this day. Magic the Gathering is a solid game, right? But the idea is that when you open that pack, there's a couple things happen, right? One is, there's a relatively interesting or good amount of value in there, right? Because even if you don't get the card that you want, you're going to get cards, and some of them are going to be good, and some of them are going to be worth money, and you can trade or even sell those cards to eventually buy the one that you actually want, right? So it might be malicious to someone who's, like, I don't know, really susceptible or really wants a particular card, but that's not the best way of buying those cards. If you want a particular card, there is a singles market. You can go out and buy just those cards that you need, right? And that singles market is what lets you sort of have that release valve from Magic truly being a sort of loot box or gambling analogy, right?
I was thinking about that, you know, you have to have two concurrent markets for people, basically, to not get in trouble.
Totally. Yeah, like, I need to be able to buy the actual thing or buy the thing randomly. I mean, I think the issue with Battlefront, though, was Darth Vader was purchasable. It was just purchasable for a lot of money. I guess in that case, it's not really a loot box issue, but it's still a value issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end of the day, you have to say, is it fair? Are you being fair with what I'm willing to risk and what I'm willing to buy here?
Yeah. I mean, I think even if you have the two concurrent markets, the insidiousness of a loot box is for people that are that do have issues controlling, you know, compulsive gambling or decision making or what have you. And I mean, we all have those problems. For me, it's, you know, it's chocolate. For some people, it's drugs. For some people, it's fucking loot boxes. But, like, our brains are just wired to be compulsive about certain things. And for people that have that compulsive bent towards something like gambling or randomness, even the fact that you could buy this straight up for $5 still might not be enough to overcome the lure of, oh, I could possibly get it for less than five if I just buy three of them. And then, you know, and then eventually you've bought more than you would have bought if you just, you know, went straight to the market, except that it was the psychological experiment of, you know, the randomness and of chance.
Well, let me ask you this then. So this past weekend, I was talking to my brother and they were talking about one of a family friend's spouse who was really into, like, I don't know, money schemes.
Oh boy.
Essentially, she bought hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of Doritos, because Doritos had this system where they were auctioning off for, like, fake points, Xbox One S's. So essentially she bought five Xbox One S's for roughly $100 to $150 a piece, right?
Is she going to sell the...
Presumably she's selling it, right? But my point is, like, there are all sorts of little ways that gambling and being able to sort of gamble in your day-to-day life, be that the California lottery and scratchers in terms of actual gambling to, like, fucking... What's that, like, roulette Doritos, where one of the chips is spicy? Couponing. You know what I mean? Like, extreme coupon. Like, there's all sorts of ways. Mm. Are video games special? Like, is there something unique about this that makes it an especially threatening endeavor in terms
I guess that's fair. I mean,
I might argue that it is. I'm just curious what you think.
I don't know. I was trying to think through, and we had read that other article about, you know, the UK Gambling Commission had looked in on this, and their argument for why they weren't going to regulate it was you can't really cash out. Like, the way that Parliament wrote laws about what is gambling and what isn't technically considered gambling is, and one of the rules is you have to be able to convert it into money somehow.
I find that fucking dumb. I don't know, dude. Like, that seems like the worst logic. It's like, you know what else you can't cash out? Money when you lose it. You know? Like, no, seriously, like, look at how much money is lost at a casino, or like, you know, you and I think both are pretty adamantly against the lottery because it tends to be a regressive tax on the poor. Right, you could argue, oh well, if you bought a lottery ticket and won, you can convert it back into cash, but at the end of the day, people don't win. Like, that money is lost.
Yeah,
you know? And you cannot cash out lost money.
It's I think that logic, I mean, it's a very technical rule, and, you know, like you're pointing out, the money is gone either way, and the compulsion of, oh, I can win something, whether it's money or something that people think is worth money, is a pretty fine line to draw.
Well, and I would also argue, especially when in certain games, like especially MMOs, I think this doesn't quite understand or respect the way that these, like, very long-term time investment games are their own mini economies. You know? This isn't like, oh, I'm randomly getting an item in, like, a single-player game, right? Like, people will consistently convert their money in these games and then that have that money and keep that money in that environment and will keep that going, you know? Like, there is value. If you look at games like, you know, this came up with Counter-Strike and, like, hats and you know, gambling sites, legal gambling sites for those games before Valve started to crack down on it. Mm-hmm. But that is its own economy, you know? Well, you had that classic example of, what is it, like, earbuds in Team Fortress 2 basically being a currency.
It becomes a currency, yeah.
And once it's become a currency and they hire actual economists to figure out these economies, right? Like, what is the difference here in this case between exchanging US dollars for in-game currency and exchanging US dollars for, like, Canadian dollars or US dollars for, like, you know, gold? You know, it's still a currency. Yeah.
I think that's, and usually I'm not really one to take this tack, but I think this is actually one of the issues of having the government get involved, because the government, unless it's very clear that this is meant to be a game of chance for legal currency, the government isn't great at the nuance of what happens in the gray market around all of these games.
Yeah.
And they're not really in the business of understanding it, and they're not in the business of keeping up to date with it and really researching it. And any rules that they do make are probably going to be pretty blunt objects to solve a pretty nuanced problem.
I think that's a very good point. And I think to that point, would you say that maybe what we're going through right now with loot boxes is similar to the discussion of violence in video games?
I think a lot about that. I mean, back in the olden days, I wrote a very long paper about the history of the ESRB. And it was a very similar situation where there was a real problem where people weren't confident that they understood the content that was in games. But one thing that they could agree on was the government probably didn't have the nuance and the perspective to properly regulate it. So they tried self-regulation, and that's where we are today. And maybe that's where we're headed now. You know, the ESA is squarely in the pocket of the big publishers, but of the two evils of a blunt object of government regulation or the ESA, maybe the ESA or something like that is the better way to go.
The ESA also, like, just came out with a statement that was in favor of Trump's tax plan also.
I mean, you know, like, I didn't say there's the ESA was perfect.
I'm just wondering, like, the ESA has no incentive whatsoever to regulate themselves, right? Like the
well,
the,
their incentive is if they don't do it, government. Then the government will step in,
right? But in the case of the ESRB, right, like the ESRB came into existence because there were congressional hearings on violence.
Yes.
So maybe we do need to, you know what I mean? Like the UK is voting in. There was an article about Belgium weighing in on like loot boxes and whether or not it's gambling. Like this is exactly the type of governmental, like the government needs to first start to say, hey, we're thinking about regulating before people, publishers and corporations will start regulating themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's probably, I mean, I think there's a lot of parallels here. And as long as you don't go fully down that path, then, you know, then it's an interesting game of chicken to play, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the one thing, though, that will delay any sort of real cemented logic to the way that these monetization schemes take place is the fan blowback. Mm-hmm. At this point is pretty significant. Yeah. But I imagine most major publishers are trading very lightly in terms of how they monetize their games.
I mean, maybe this is one of the unicorn examples of when the market actually corrects itself because people can get their shit together and actually make big corporations feel the pain, either from PR or from sales or from reputation or whatever. Yeah. But maybe this is one of those very rare phenomena where people actually get their act together and vote with their dollars or their, you know, social voices.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I'll say on the subject in terms of regulation, at least, is regardless of who regulates, I don't think it's like loot boxes have to exist in the way that they do. You know, like I think there's a certain feeling that, oh, well, you know, of course we're monetizing games like this. This is just sort of the way that things are and the way that they have to be. And I just don't, that clearly is not the case. Like there are other ways to make money. And, you know, if this isn't like a mom and pop store trying to like have a deal to come in and like, hey, mystery bag of donuts, you know, like this isn't an industry that's struggling to think of ways to make money. This is a particularly easy one and a lucrative one. And I think that's why it's coming under such scrutiny, and it should come under that much scrutiny.
And it's, if you want to make games the way we're used to making them, the size and the team size and the fidelity and the expense of making these really big fancy games, then you have to understand how expensive it is and that people will have to make the money somewhere, and totally. Both people have to, you know, both sides have to understand how expensive it is, both the people that are playing it and also the corporations, where it's like, well, the market won't bear this, so EA is not going to make games like this anymore, and if people are fine with that, then that's cool. But there's, you know, there's costs that people don't quite understand.
Totally. Yeah,
if games gave away donut bags, I would pre-order every game.
Oh my god, can you imagine? There should be more deals, you know what I mean? Like Papa John's and Mountain Dew and shit.
I mean, we tried that every once in a while. There's, you know, Halo was on the Mountain Dew cans, and fucking there's all kinds of like Dorito buy-ins.
You know what's funny?
Stuff.
You know what's funny though? It's like people don't complain about that shit. Because I remember when Destiny 2 just came out, they had a deal, I think it was Mountain Dew, where there was bonus XP on cans.
Remember there was like Red Bull Sparrows and shit?
Yeah, like that's straight up like pay to win, right? I mean, you're getting bonuses, pay to level up. You just have to actually go in store. I think it's easier to say, no, I don't want that crap, when it's real money. And then I think that's one of the bigger problems with loot boxes is, man, real money becomes fake money, and it just becomes so much easier to spend.
Exactly. It becomes very easy to wave that away as space credits.
I mean, as someone that is honestly has probably spent close to $1,000 in League of Legends over like the decade of me playing it.
Yeah.
Man, like that money goes away. It sure does.
But you have a cool hat for the rest of your account's life cycle.
I mean, and again, I think that's an interesting perspective, right? Is monetizing a game after their launch when I can justify the spend because it's like, oh, I've gotten so much joy out of this, you know? Like, I feel like I'm paying back for value I've already received.
Yeah.
It's a little bit harder when the Battlefront 2 debacle took place before the game ever was even out.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I mean, A, you have to make a kick-ass game, but B, you have to have a lot of faith in both your game and the audience to to reward and to buy in afterwards. I mean, I think ultimately that's probably the right way to go, but it's also a disastrous way if your game flops, because you then have nothing. You know, people would go on the long tail, and when you don't have that long tail, then that's it.
Well, I think that's where games like PUBG and early access games are interesting, because they release before they're done.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't have that. I mean, you do have an upfront investment, of course, every time you make a game you do, but maybe that upfront investment isn't quite as hefty.
Yeah.
And you could sort of measure and scale back based upon
you can
how
course
good
correct.
Your game actually is. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, PUBG's going to have a shit ton of loot boxes by the time it comes out. But what it will have out are people who've already invested so much time that they're okay with it.
For sure. For sure.
Ooh. Plus, you can sell that shit on the Steam market for crazy cash.
Complicated stuff when all you want is a purple polka dot tuxedo in PUBG.
Seriously. I'm just trying to give you my money, goddammit.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address if you want to give us money.
I wish we had like cool little loot boxes. Experiencepoints.net is our website. That's our Death Star of monetization.
Oh,
we just
yeah.
blow up competitors.
It is fully operational. Is.
Oh man, they should have doubled down and gone that route. You can find us wherever you're listening to podcasts, including wherever you're listening to this one right now. If you're listening, do us a favor, tell a friend about us.
Cool. Thank you for listening, everyone. Until next week, we'll talk to you soon. See you later.
Ciao. Every time we disagree, there's a place to go to, because I